Don't believe what I just saw.
I'm a man. I'm 40.
This is John Sheezer. I'm here.
Eric Marino.
Eric.
No, I got to tell you about the Clippers. I'm an
addict. Sportsaholics. I got to.
Let's just hope this shit doesn't go viral.
Okay.
Welcome back to Sportsaholics. This is, I'm not numbering this episode. This is the holiday, Christmas, New Year's, Kwanzaa, Hanukkah, everything wrapped into one episode. Just because I'm going to be traveling a lot over the holidays, so I wasn't going to be able to be around the studio, per se, on the Sunday to keep the show coming out. But I'm going to be off. Hopefully you guys will be off work. This is a great episode. We've got Eric. He's going to be calling in later. We'll have him on. He's up in, I believe, New England, doing his thing up there. Stephen Walden, an amazing artist who's based out of St. Louis, who's worked with a lot of professional athletes, teams, college teams, different things like that. Does amazing things with the paintbrush. So we have him on just to kind of talk about how we got started, all that kind of stuff. But guys, the 2017 is done. I mean, we've got a couple days left, and for me, I'm happy that it's done. It was a pretty exhausting year. There was a lot of great things. There was a lot of bad things personally that happened, you know, with all sorts of different things, not to get into too great a detail, but obviously survived those and was able to move forward, hopefully making me a better, stronger person. I'm sure you listeners out there have had individual instances of this throughout the year. And so the key here, just, I guess, learn from them a little bit. Don't let them... The shitty stuff sucks. Okay, it takes a couple days to get over, a week, sometimes a month, but just try and get over it. Tomorrow might not even be a sunny day. It might be cold and shitty, but eventually there will be a sunny day. That's kind of the way I looked at 2017. I was like, really? That's going to happen? Okay. And then something good would happen. Be like, all right, okay. But yeah, so 2018 I'm looking forward to personally. In the sports realm of things, I mean, we'll see. We'll see the Chiefs. I mean, I'm hoping Super Bowl. I know they're probably not going to get there, but they're playing better now. So let's just say maybe Chiefs Super Bowl, the Royals 500. I'm just shooting for 500 for you guys. You know, pitchers and catchers is already like a month and a half away. So that's actually fantastic. I'm planning on going down to spring training. Hopefully the opening game is supposed to be Dodgers-Royals. I've got an invitation from Mark Cassidy, previous guest. He's going to be out there representing the Dodger blue, so I might have to join him representing the Royal blue. But now 2018, and especially for the show, now that Eric's out in New York working on Saturday Night Live, obviously his time is very limited, and they work, I don't even want to say 80-hour weeks. It's just nonstop, you know, for months at a time until they go on vacations and breaks and that sort of thing. As you listeners have noticed, I've tried to introduce some knowledge, more history and just variety, I guess, into the show. And so if you have any recommendations, if you know someone that used to play minor league baseball or played briefly in the NFL or played soccer in South America, beach volleyball in Israel, interesting stories like that, I'd love to have them on as guests. They can reach out through Twitter, Facebook page would be a good way. Sportsaholics@gmail.com is the email. Just looking for more variety, and I've got some great interviews lined up here coming up for 2018 too for you guys. And so really, I appreciate you guys listening. You know, the summer we took some weeks off here and there. Again, apologize for that. There was a lot of shuffling going on, you know, obviously with Eric jumping out east like we just talked about. So to kind of settle into this new direction, I'm excited about, one, personally, because I'm learning a lot of stuff as I talk to these historians and in baseball and sports and other areas. You know, it's because when you talk to it, it stays in to my head much easier that way than as, what am I trying to say here? If I talk to you, I'm going to remember the stuff as opposed to me reading it. If I have to read it, it's going to take me 5, 6, 7 times to retain that stuff. And so doing these interviews, like with Dave Pomeroy with the Oakland Athletics, you know, it's great learning all that. Or Bob Kendrick from the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, all that history. I love it, and hopefully you guys do too. And so, like I said, if you know anyone that's got a really good sports story, could be, doesn't have to be professional, it can be high school, anything like that, you know, definitely love to consider having them on the show. All right, we'll go to break here. We'll do some plugs real fast. As you guys know, if you need shirts printed up, go to unionpresskc.com. That's unionpresskc.com. Jerseys, softball, basketball. If you got like a family reunion coming up, if you're in a band, anything like that, they do a great job and they'll take care of you. As does Don Carlos Taco Shop in La Jolla, California. Amazing food. If you're in Southern California, San Diego, La Jolla, even if you're in Oceanside, it's worth driving down there for 30 minutes to check it out. On Pearl Street, Kitty Catty Corner from the world famous comedy store. Again, that's Don Carlos Taco Shop. And follow them on Instagram and Twitter at Eat a Burrito. And tell them we sent you. And I don't know if that'll do anything, but Ryan's cool. And he'll be like, oh, yeah, I love those guys. Those guys are great. And then, you know, you guys talk about how the Chargers suck or something. Oh, real quick, also, too, Kansas City, Stanford and Sons, that club is reopening. And I'm actually going to be there next week or this week. I'm going to be there December 26th, 7th, and 8th. That's a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, December 26th, 27th, and 28th, following Christmas. And so, apparently it's a small club. It's down in downtown Kansas City now on Walnut, 813 Walnut. So within, you know, probably 5-10 blocks of the Power and Light and all that kind of stuff, somewhere down in that area. And so I know a lot of people are excited because it's actually in downtown, so it's kind of centrally located for you Kansas City listeners. Please come out. Every show, 7:30. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. All the shows start at 7:30, and apparently the tickets are $5 and $10, so they're very cheap. So as far as guest list goes, I mean, you can RSVP reservations. There's only, I guess, 100 chairs, and so it's a third of the size of the old club. If any of you listeners had been out to a previous show that are listening right now, it's a little bit tighter, and so I'd recommend, if you are coming out, you know, get there like 7 or something like that. And apparently, bring your dancing shoes because the whole thing turns into one big dance party as soon as the comedy ends. But all right, that's it for the plugs. Oh, yeah, go to johnishere.com, johnishere.com. That's got all the info and probably some links and that if I ever put those up. But all right, when we come back from break, the one and only Eric Marino, the man, is back. All right, and we are back, and as promised, Eric has rejoined us every other episode, and they're keeping his word. Eric is with us for the beautiful
state. Hey, everybody. Hey, John Caesar, Sportsaholics, everyone. I hope you guys have been staying obsessed. It's crazy out there. It's crazy what's happening out there in the world of the NFL, right?
Yeah, I was going to bring up your little locker room thing with the Brady's personal trainer or whatever's going on there. But
right,
you got more pressing issues, more different, you know, something else. You know, I'm game.
No, I'm ready to talk about that. You know, it's like, dude, unfortunately, what we don't know about that trainer is what's really going on.
Yeah,
because I'm back in New England. I'm hearing all the sources, and it's one of those things like, hey, you know, TB12 Industries, this Alex Guerrero guy. It seems like one of those things that, like, sort of a case of, like, maybe Alex Guerrero, who had an office at Foxborough Stadium, maybe sort of advised some players of the Patriots a little bit too much, or, you know, and then all of a sudden, maybe it's like, it even involves Jimmy G, it even involves Jimmy Garoppolo, where a point where maybe this guy who's, like, you know, he's Brady's personal business partner, personal trainer, et cetera, et cetera. Some other, like Gronkowski, Edelman, Amendola also go to the TB12. Like, they're, like, they train with, like, it's a very interesting dynamic between, hey, you're a member of the team and this is, like, your trainer for the Patriots. And this is like, hey, as an individual athlete, I go and I put my money, I train with this person. This happens in a lot of different sports, in baseball, football, basketball, absolutely. Where you see that the athlete trains on the off season with this person or that person, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And now, like, but now it's like, you know, maybe Tom Brady and Tom Brady's trainer has come a little bit too close. And now we had to make some adjustments. It's a big thing.
If they're in there messing with what the team wants to do as far as training or wants out of their players.
Right.
This guy comes in, he's like, actually, you shouldn't do that. You should do this. And then
right.
Next thing you know, they're like, well, he said this. And he's like, he doesn't work for us. They're like, why does he have an office?
That's where we are. That's exactly where we are. Well, that guy doesn't work for us.
And they're like, well, why does he have an office? He has an office here. And they're like, not anymore. This is done.
Right.
Okay.
Right. There's okay. Some version of that. That's what's going on.
Okay. That makes sense.
But the bigger story to me is, if you, like, you know, you're a Chiefs fan, so you probably didn't pay attention, but the end of the Steelers-Patriots game was controversial because of Jesse James making a catch that was not a catch. He did not, quote, survive the ground. This is very important, the surviving the ground. He caught a ball in the closing seconds of the game, made a move. It looked like he scored a touchdown. He did break the plane of the end zone, but he couldn't survive the ground with the catch, and so therefore it was an incomplete pass, which is not a touchdown, and Patriots won.
So, I mean, were you surprised by the result, or were you watching that?
Oh, my God. Let me tell you this. As to everyone out there, first of all, and my father will testify, I was in New York watching with my father. I literally, not only did I think it was a touchdown, I didn't understand why we were viewing it. I was like, let's just get on. It's 7, you know, to put the points on the board. Let's get the Patriots the ball. I got 28 seconds. I got a chance to try to win.
It's happened before. God, it'd be nice to be a Patriots fan to be able to think
right,
like
that's
that.
That's what I'm saying. Just give me 28 seconds and a chance to win the game. That's what I'm saying. I'm a Patriots fan. Like, I'm going to be down by 4. Let's go. And but when I saw what happened, that, like, it isn't a catch. It isn't a catch. And I'm sorry it's not a catch, but it's like, there's even a point where, and this is the one thing that I like to communicate to people who saw the Jesse James catch, was that it's like, imagine Julio Jones. Like, Julio Jones, during the Super Bowl last year, made this amazing sideline catch where he got both feet inbounds and held the ball into the ball and made this amazing, and like, one of the greatest catches in Super Bowl history is what he did. But if Julio Jones had bobbled and the ball had come loose when he hit the ground outside the sidelines, it would have been an incomplete. It didn't matter where his feet were.
Right, right.
It would have been.
The ball stayed in contact with his hands the whole time.
There's a point where the receiver has to, like, what is and is not a reception changes from play to play because of how this reception happens or that reception happens. You know, it's like, There's a difference between I'm Randy Moss catching it this way, I'm Danny Amendola catching it that way, Julian Edelman catching it here.
Or like elbows, do elbows count as feet? This past weekend, the guy that landed,
classic one knee equals 2 feet. What does one butt cheek? What is an elbow? You know, what's a football move? All these things all come to play, except that, you know, it's like, hey, you need to, like, if you're going to score the game-winning touchdown, then you need to hold on to the ball so it's not disputed that it's a touchdown.
Yeah, just don't let it, don't, just
don't eliminate. Bottle it, bro. Just hold, all you need to do is hold. It's like, by the way, if you had possession of it so solid, then I can't imagine the ground would knock it out of your hands, but it did. And so you didn't have a reception. That's what it is. It's like you had a reception until you didn't have a reception. And that's where we are.
And more importantly, on a bigger scale, it's like you have home field advantage and then you don't have home field advantage.
Now, and the bigger thing is that was like as a Patriots fan, I'm like, oh my God, we just ripped the heart of the Steeler fans. It's like Indiana Jones on the Temple of Doom. And I just ripped the Steeler fans' heart pumping, bumping. You know what I mean? It's beating out of their chest. And I ripped it out of their chest, and it's pa-pump, pa-pump, pa-pump. Like, yeah, I mean, like, at right now, like, the Philadelphia Steeler, I mean, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh Steeler fans should have a real neurosis about the Patriots. Like,
just jump on the list. I mean, add it to the ever growing. It's every team except for the Giants. Is more or less.
No, right. It's true. That is also true. We can't fuck up the Giants. Everyone else, we can really mess up.
Yeah, the Giants. They'll go toe to toe with you like 12 rounds. It'll go the card, and it'll be a draw. But
that's the other thing. It's like, I'll be honest with you, like, as a New England Patriot fan, it's like, I don't care about going. Like, if I have to play the AFC Championship in Pittsburgh, I've won the AFC Championship in Pittsburgh to go and then go win a Super Bowl. Like, it's like Patriot fans are very at ease with beating Pittsburgh to go and win the Super Bowl. That's an old hat.
That's almost out of style for a Patriot fan.
On the other hand, like having to go on the road to Denver, Mile High Stadium, sometimes creates a little bit of a problem.
It's the altitude. They don't really play it up quite as much as they used to. I don't know if there's better oxygen equipment or whatever, but I remember as a kid, they just every Monday Night Football game, at least a quarter's worth of the broadcast was in discussion about how there was no oxygen and everyone was going to pass out. And it's just like it's not that much of an advantage. And it's not like, I mean, they're gone half the time anyway. And it's not like they're, I mean, it wasn't 10 Mile High Stadium. It was only a mile. And look, Denver's not even like when
it
you.
It isn't 10 Mile. What a great point, Caesar. It's not 10 Mile High Stadium.
It's what I'm saying also is for those of you that haven't been to Denver, it's not even like, yeah, there's mountains, but you drive, it's like flat. It's a gradual increase in altitude as you get to Denver. But the first time I remember, I guess I expected it to be completely on the top of a mountain or something. I don't know. You hear Mile High Stadium and then you roll up and you're like, oh, I still got to drive another 30 minutes to actually get to the mountains, to the base of the mountain. But anyway, you're not going through Denver this year. So I guess that's not going to be a problem for you guys. Do you even have any concerns right now? I mean, we got 3 weeks left of the season. What's your guys' schedule looking like?
You know, we always have problems. You know, we have to make sure we take care of Buffalo, and we have Gronkowski got in trouble hurting a player, so that's an issue.
To jump off of football onto what's highlights of 2018? What are
2017
or 20? Excuse me, year in review. 2017 for yourself, yes. What year in review? What are some of your personal highlights of 2017? It's been a big year for you.
It has been an amazing year for me. I will say this: one of the biggest events for me was, of course, traveling to Fenway Park, and having what I would have to consider perhaps the greatest fan experience of my life. That I went to Fenway Park in July. We're playing the Cleveland Indians, and I actually got in the pitcher's head. I had such good seats that the pitcher could clearly hear me. And I led my section in a cheer to, like, people were yelling me for to get down in front, get down in front. And I said, why don't you stand up in back, like stand and win with me.
Great rebuttal.
And, you know, it was one of the greatest fan experiences I've ever had in my life. Like being at Fenway and the game that I won, and I'm going to say that I won it. In July was one of the greatest experiences of my fandomed life. Like that was one of the best, like, you know, and also, and remember the Patriots won the Super Bowl. Like, you know, the Patriots, as a Patriots fan, I didn't get the perfect season in the 2007, 2008 year. But if I can't have that, like having the greatest comeback in Super Bowl history, having an overtime win in Super Bowl history, these are really close seconds. These are amazing things where, in that sense, like, you know, this whole show is called Sportsaholics because we're obsessed with sports. And it was the winning of the Patriots of Super Bowl 51 that I can now, like, sort of go into semi-retirement as a Patriots fan.
See, I think that's even better than a perfect season because
yeah,
No one remembers the 72 Dolphins anymore. I mean, half the team is probably deceased at this point anyway. Sure. And they were, what, 12-0? That was the other thing. They played four less games.
Right.
So what's the running back, Washington or
Mercury Morris.
Yeah, that's the outspoken squeaky wheel of that whole, yes, like we're the best team ever thing.
But they won 14 regular season games. They went 17-0. And there's a weird point where it's like, look, we've seen Super Bowls won, we've seen Super Bowls lost. 28-3 in the third quarter. I literally had to sit there and be like, I mean, year in review, Caesar, 28-3, 25 points down. I took a shower at halftime. I made right with Jesus. I had to realize, like, okay, I wasn't going to shave my head after Patriots won. I have to say something nice to Jerron Horton and Munch Wade and all our fans, like, you know, Jason Tebow, who's an Atlanta Falcon fan.
Yep.
I was going to be nice to all Atlanta Falcon fans. And then something happened, and I didn't lose that game. I didn't lose that Super Bowl. It was one of the craziest things that ever happened in my life, and I love it.
That's a great start of 2018.
Yeah. And that, you know, it's like, it's amazing. It's an amazing time.
2017. I keep saying, I'm ready to start next year already, clearly.
Yeah. Yeah. And we'll do it, you know, and we'll see where the Royals go and the Chiefs go, the Jayhawks, the Patriots, the Red Sox. It's very interesting. The Kyrie Irving Celtics. There's a lot to happen in 2018. It's very insightful. I mean, and as much as I want to retire, you want to know what's going to happen with Brady and Belichick this 2018. You want to know what happens, Kyrie Irving. Will the Red Sox get? And then, you know, hey, will the Schlitterbahn destroy the world's largest killer water slide? Will they knock it down?
Will they finally take it down piece by piece?
That's right.
Which I hope I do get wind of that because I would like to go just, you know,
for the implosion.
Yeah, grab some rubble. Be like, I got a piece of Kansas City history.
That happened, by the way. That happened this year. The killer water slide joke. That happened this year. It was a crazy year. This has been amazing.
Yeah,
2017 has in many ways been the best year of my life.
Yeah, you got to go to. We were in Kansas City doing shows in April.
Sure.
That was fun. You went to North Carolina, didn't, and then. Did you go to Florida at one point? Were you in Florida?
I've been to Florida. I've been across America. I spent
That's right,
Caesar. I spent more than a month in hotel rooms this year. Like, I spent more than 1 month in hotel rooms during this calendar year. It's crazy.
God, that there's something comfortable about a hotel room. When I hear you say that, I'm like, man, that just it sounds stressful, but because I know a lot of those hotel rooms were probably for one or two night stays.
Sure. No, there's also a peacefulness of like, I have the key. You don't have a key. I have a key to my room, and I can let whoever I want in and no one else. It's my room. And there's a peaceful feeling that's very American. It's part of the American dream. I have a hotel room.
Well, I want to put it out that hopefully this in 2018 that you'll spend equal, if not more, times in hotel room.
I know. That's what we're also saying, too. It's like just the beginning, right?
Yeah, exactly. In this case, maybe a couple weeks working on a movie, and they have to put you up in a hotel room in, I'm going to go with Kentucky for some reason.
Oh shit. Damn it. Now I'm cursing Kentucky.
Yeah, that just popped out of my head. But no, that's great, man. And I mean, that's years and years of hard work, you know, leading up to the shows that you've done and the show that you're working on now. And the, 80-100 hour weeks that you're pulling there with the crazy 6 a.m.
No days off. In the words of Bill Belichick, no days off. Do your job, no days off.
When is the official end of the SNL season? June?
May 19th.
May 19th? May 19th. Okay. Nice. Very nice. Well, is there anything else you'd like to...
I would like to wish all our listeners out there a very Merry Christmas and a spectacular New Year. Because, by the way, thank all of you for listening to us for all the years, for all the episodes you have. And amazing things have happened for both me and John because of you guys. So thank you guys so much for listening. And it is a pleasure and an honor to jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Thank you guys for listening.
Perfect. I think that we'll
early to rise, early in the sack. I thank God I'm a country boy. Well, a simple kind of life never did me no harm. Raising me a family and working on the farm. Days are all filled with an easy country charm. Thank God I'm a country boy. Well, I got me a fine wife, I got me old fiddle. When the sun's coming up, I got cakes on the griddle. Life ain't nothing but a funny, funny riddle. Thank God I'm a country boy. When the work's all done and the sun's set low, pull out my fiddle and
Eric, thank you. I appreciate it. I mean, especially because you're in no man's land up there in New Hampshire, getting your New Hampshire on, getting your, I don't know what you do, log trees and standing snow is what I imagine, but I do know it's beautiful, so I hope you're really making the most of it. I'm just gonna go into our interview with Stephen or Stephen Walden. I kept calling him Stephen Walden, an incredible artist, and you know, we kind of talk about how he got his start. And guys, the point of this, the theme of this interview, it's never too late to do anything. You want to learn to play a guitar your whole life. Let's say you're 45 right now. You're like, God, I always wanted to play guitar. Just start. You're going to suck real bad. But by the time you're 53, you're going to be really good at guitar. And as we all know, life goes by real fast. And so Steven was lucky enough to stumble across a talent later on in his life that now has become a career. We go into all of his websites and everything and during the interview, so you guys can by all means follow him and check out his work and pick some of it up, because like I said, it's great stuff and you guys will really like it. So when we get back from break, we'll be talking with Stephen Walden, sports artist, well, just artist in general, extraordinaire.
Time to play. No Midwestern boy, yes, I'm getting by on Central Time. Some people say that the Mississippi River is the backbone of the nation. won't. I won't disagree with that statement. I see people working hard as ever. Just wonder what I can do to make their lives better. I'm just a plain old Midwestern boy getting by on Central Time.
All right, we are back with Stephen Walden. Steve Walden. Is there a preference? Do you have a preference, Steve? Stephen?
Yeah, I go with Steven, or, you know, Stone Cold also works.
That is fantastic. In fact, you also carry around an Austin 316 on your keychain.
Yeah, I try to keep it real. Yeah, represent the Raw era.
Oh, that's fantastic. Listeners, the reason that Stephen Walden is on today is he is a very talented artist, illustrator. You can find his work on Instagram, @Steve Walden. Did I get that right?
It's at Steve N. Yeah. Professionally go by Steve N. So.
Okay. That's right. I forgot the N. So it's at Steven, Steven Walden, Walden. Did I mess that up?
That's it.
All right. Steven. Well, there we go. But it was that, in fact, it was that Bo Jackson piece that jumped out at me, and I was like, wow, that's incredible. You got a very unique style, which, you know, for art is, you know, it's kind of nice to see, almost refreshing. But how did you get into painting football, baseball? It just seemed like your portfolio is really all across the board. And listeners, again, Stephen Walden on Instagram, go check that out. How did you get started with all that?
Yeah, it's a funny story. I came to painting late in my life. I'm 42 right now, and I didn't know that I could paint until 2014, so almost going to be 4 years ago. I was pursuing my master's to be a therapist, and I took, as a part of my graduate programs, I took an elective, and it was an art therapy, and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to paint. I never painted before, and I picked up a brush. My classmates saw my work. They said, holy crap, dude, you're good. You need to get your stuff out there. I submitted to a new artist, a beginning artist show. My stuff got in, and it just really took off from there. And the next thing that I know, I'm working with some pro athletes and teams. And it's what I do full time now.
Oh, that's fantastic. Now, is that the reason that you were really kind of drawn to it initially? Was the therapeutic element in the art making and creating these pieces?
I think therapeutic for me personally, you know, because I was going through some stuff at the time. And to me, to have art as an outlet, you know, is a really wonderful thing. And you know, I drew in high school. But it was, you know, it's always pencils, sometimes colored pencils. And I hated it. I was good at it, but I hated it because it was so much about trying to get something to look exactly right, to make it photorealistic. And penciling it's a painstaking process when you're trying to reproduce things like that. And what I loved about painting was that it was so fast, and it was so, it got such a different kind of a instant gratification from it compared to, you know, hammering out or grinding out, you know, a pencil drawing.
That is true. And again, listeners, you can also go to StephenWalden.com, and the gallery is very extensive. And actually, what I really like about your pieces is that, listeners, they're very affordable. A lot of them are actually on sale right now over the holidays. And so it's not like you're going on this site and you're like, oh, I can't afford $800. Like, I mean, some of these are on sale for as low as $25. They range, you know, in upwards from there. But there's a lot to choose from that are in a very, affordable price range. So that's something. That's why, listeners, you should really go check it out, SteveWalden.com, and look at some of this stuff, because I've already got a couple. This Clayton Kershaw one you got where he's throwing the fire. I mean, that's just incredible. Yeah.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that. That was fun. I did that for a big Dodgers fan that I met here in St. Louis, is where I live. And it's also funny just when you find fans of teams and the oddest of places. But he knew he wanted a Dodgers piece, and we had fun figuring out, well, who do you want it to be? And he decided he wanted to do a whole series of them. And the first one was Kershaw. The second one was Vin Scully. And he actually wound up giving the Vin Scully piece that I did for him. He gave gave it to Vin himself. So Vin owns one of my pieces.
Wonderful. Now, I wonder if that's the – I've seen a Vin Scully picture online that's very similar in your style, and I'm assuming now you must be the creator of that now that I'm thinking about it, because over how long ago did you make that, like a year ago?
Yeah, it was about a year ago.
See, I'm pretty sure I've seen that just around Instagram, especially being out here in LA. I mean, Vince Scully was a god, and so his retirement, apparently the Dodgers were able to continue playing and very successfully, but that was a major concern with a lot of fans was, are the Dodgers going to be able to take the field without Vince Scully?
Well, the man is a legend, and you know, and rightly deserved, you know, deservedly so. You know,
absolutely.
One of the greatest broadcasters of all time, if not, you know, the greatest baseball broadcaster of all time.
Now, are you in? You're in St. Louis. Excuse me. Are you from St. Louis, or like, what's the makings of your sports fandom here on Sportsaholics? Yeah. We like to really pick your brain, find out what sports juices are driving you.
Yeah, so my sports juices, it's a concoction of growing up in southern Arkansas. So we've got Razorbacks fans there. So, you know, football and basketball, big time college basketball.
It's safe to assume you love Corliss Williamson?
Yeah, Corliss is God, big nasty. Yeah, love Corliss, yeah.
His sidekick? I can't think of his name. Not Laurent Prophet. That was from UMass and Marcus Camby. What was the What was the B option?
Scotty Thurman.
That's what I'm thinking.
He sank the three against Duke in the '94 championship over Grant Hill's head. That propelled us to our. I think our only basketball national championship, and they're trying to reclaim a little bit of that spark with Mike Anderson there and some of the 40 minutes of hell with, he was Nolan Richardson's understudy. So, but it's really hard for me in St. Louis to follow a lot of Arkansas sports because, I mean, I don't have any of the extended packages or anything. I'm sure I could always go to Buffalo Wild Wings and have some really shitty wings and watch the game there. Wild Wings is not. I hope they're not a sponsor of the show.
No, absolutely not.
Hey, their onion rings are great, you know, but shit, man. It's like, come on, get the thing right that you do.
I thought you were going to say you were distracted because of all the police sirens and meth lab smoke in St. Louis blowing around everywhere.
Well, I am. The reputation of the city precedes me. Now, and what's funny is I live outside of the city. I'm in Jefferson County, and the whole joke is like Jeff County is what St. Louis County makes fun of. You get the crime and the violence in St. Louis City, but the meth is out in Jeff County.
There you go.
You come for the violence, you stay for the meth. Yeah.
And listeners, let's just nothing compared to that Arkansas meth. You know, the St. Louis, I mean, top notch stuff.
Arkansas meth is, I think it's a smash and grab at a local Walgreens and you get all the oxycodone. So, not that I'm speaking from experience or anything like that. St. Louis has got a couple of black eyes and deservedly so recently. But there are a lot of really, really great people that are here.
Yeah, no, I have a good friend that moved there. He's been there a couple of years. He enjoys it. And he's actually from Kansas City, like myself. And, So once you started kind of working with the paints, and does there come to a point as an artist where you start showing your work to people? You're like, what do you think of this? And then people immediately say, this is incredible. This should be for sale somewhere. Is that kind of the...
Yeah.
How it went down for you?
You know, people bag on social media a lot because it is a lot of self-absorption and a lot of oversharing, and there's the invasion of privacy, but I wouldn't have my career if it weren't for social media. And, you know, I mean, the way that things work is that, you know, I was in this art therapy class and I took pictures of my progress because that was another kind of a modern thing. Like when I drew back in high school and we're looking at the early 90s, we didn't have we had instant cameras, but we didn't have, digital cameras that were able to, you know, you could just take continual snaps and instantly, you know, chart the progress of a piece. And I was like, well, that's something new. I'm going to do that. And I started taking photos of my pieces as they were coming together. And I started getting really great feedback from my friends on Facebook. And that just led me to continuing to post more and more and more, created that feedback loop. And then ultimately somebody, you know, a couple people reached out to me and they said, hey, how much would it be if, you know, I wanted you to do that? And that was a real moment of, really? You want to pay me to do this? So that was a shift. And it's kind of, I think there's just one moment that probably happens in all artists, and, you know, some younger than others and some older than others. And, you know, mine happened to me when I was, what, 39. So.
No, it's great because, you know, and with a lot of great things, it just happens organically. And all of a sudden you're creating something where, you know, there's a high demand for it.
Go ahead.
No. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, and like you said, you know, there's a gradual process. I mean, our progress to it, but my progress, it also had a really steep incline because it went from, someone paying me like $300 to do a piece to, all right, I'll do a piece and then I'll put it up at a charity auction, which I did. And then that wound up going for like $1,500. And that was a real, a moment of, you know, it was like, well, wait a minute, $1,500 is a lot of money to make from the painting. So it's like, there could be some legitimacy to this. And then I wound up selling a print of a piece and that went for $1,500. And I'm like, okay, holy shit, this is lightning in a bottle. I need to figure out how I can harness this. And I did. And, you know, it was just that moment of, and like I was going through, you know, grad school to be a therapist. And then that was my plan, was I was going to be a therapist. But then when I discovered that I could paint, it's like, well, maybe this is going to be what my career looks like. And I'm not going to be talking to people about their problems, but I'm going to be, you know, painting pictures for a living. And that's, you know, that's when that shift happened. And that was also a really interesting moment. It was a crossroads moment. And, you know, and I took the path that was lined with acrylic paint.
And that's, look, not to go all rah-rah life speech here, but that's what makes life kind of crazy. You never know what the next day holds, you know? And and what you do is somewhat therapeutic because it keeps on, like, I'm looking at this amazing piece here with the Chicago Cubs World Series win where they're all piling on each other. I mean, if you're a Cubs fan and that's hanging on your wall, every day you walk in and you smile. You're like, God, that was 2016 was the greatest year of my life. You know, so there's something to that. I feel like, you know, as far as therapy for us sports fans who need reminders of what were the good old days. From whatever team we're from.
Absolutely. And it's a big reason that I chose the color palette that I wanted to paint in, which is it's vibrant. It's, you know, the colors are really out there. But to me, it's that I wanted to paint so much of the action, but more importantly, the joy of sports, of happiness. I mean, I'm sure some people follow sports to be in pain, and we call those people Cleveland Browns fans.
Yeah.
But, you know, we follow them as an escape to be happy, to give us some moment of joy or to feel like we're winning or something like that. And I wanted to capture that. Those moments of happiness are moments of awe that, you know, turn into happiness, you know, and that comes across, I hope it comes across with the very colors that I choose.
No, it absolutely does. But there's something about the way, even though they're really bright, there's something, it's not like, it's hard to I mean, listeners, again, go to StephenWalden.com and check this out. Because I want to say, like, you would expect it. I'm going to use the word tacky, because I think of bright colors and I think of people wearing Lake of the Ozarks neon yellow shirts from Weekend at Dick's at the Docks or whatever bar you're going to down there. But you make these colors like blend so perfectly. It's really incredible.
I appreciate that. Yeah, and I think the word that's used most often in like the artistic word for tacky is garish. they're super bright colors. And I had another artist describe to me, he says, and this was really interesting, he said, your palette and your style is very American. And he was not American. And I said, really? And he meant it as a compliment. I said, well, what do you mean by that? He said, it's bold. It's unapologetic. It's in your face. It says, this is who I am. This is what I do. And I'm like, wow, I never really thought about that, but it's absolutely true. And I get it. It's not going to be somebody's bag. You know, it's like, I've shown pieces and there are people who look at it and they're like, I love your work, but I just can't see it going with my couch. And I'm like, and that's fine.
Yeah, that's
you know?
Fine. Yeah.
That's and some people do that. I mean, that's why, you know, if you go onto some art sites to find the art that you want, you search by the color of the piece. And it's like, well, I mean, I don't know. That's not how I approach things, but I get it. That's why some people do.
I mean, and listeners, again, you got to go to StephenWalden.com. He's got something for everybody. Your Ozzie Smith work, these pieces are fantastic. One, you commemorate the backflip perfectly, and there's a couple different prints that are showing the infamous Ozzie Smith backflip. But this Ozzie turning the double play, jumping over Frank White.
Yes. Oh,
beautiful. Absolutely, as a Royals fan, and as a huge Frank White fan, I mean that's an incredible piece right there. But my favorite is gonna be he's got this incredible piece where Ozzie Smith is diving through the St. Louis Arch, and he's on the other side of the arch is the Wizard of Oz and the Yellow Brick Road. Oh shit! Hold on. There we go. Sorry, I got someone else bothering me. There we go.
That's fine.
But yeah, no, it's incredible. And I wanted to ask you too. Like, have you been able to meet any athletes in person or work with any teams specifically or anything like that since you started?
Yeah, definitely. It's that Ozzie Frank White piece you mentioned. I was working with Ozzie directly to create that. Ozzie has a charity. He's really active in the St. Louis community. I mean, he's really, you know, Mr. Cardinal, especially now that Stan Musial has passed, you know, who is a huge figurehead in the community. And Ozzie is, you know, I mean, I think the mantle has now gone to him. And
he's now got the baton. Yeah, I could see that. I could see that.
Yeah, it's almost like it's an informal kind of a dignitary, you know. One of the things that he does, it's called Gateway PGA Reach, which is about they set up golfing programs, and you know, we have former veterans that come in, and you know, they're dealing with PTSD, and one of the things that you know that they have them work through it is they have them play golf, and they're able to make it fun and all these other things. Well, anyway, with the PGA Reach, they have a big gala event, and they had one this last summer, and Ozzie brought in Ryan Sandberg, and I did one piece of Ozzie and one of Rhino, and we auctioned those off to raise funds, and Rhino actually liked his so much, he even asked for one for himself. And you go to Ryan's Instagram, you'll see it. I think it was sometime in July, he posted a picture of himself hanging out with the painting that he had.
How does that feel? Like, how does that, like, the guy's in his house with the piece. I mean, what is that, like, you created that. What does that feel like?
That's one of those, it feels like achievement unlocked, you know, dude level up moments, you know. It's that, it's right up there when I was with Brett Hull, former Blues hockey player. You know, he had also seen my work in an event, and we connected, and he loved it. He wound up buying the piece, and then he called me up, and he said, hey, we're doing a retirement party for Barrett Jackman. It's a former Blues player, and he was holding it at his house, and he asked me if I would be able to do, like, a live painting of Barrett there. And while I was there to and I did. I was at the retirement party, and I painted a piece of Barrett. But in the room that Brett had me set up in, I'm on one side painting, and on the other side of the room, he's got the original artwork that Leroy Neiman had painted of Brett, and then the original that Leroy had painted of his dad, Bobby Hull, with the Hawks. And in that moment, it felt so surreal to be like, I'm in Brett Hull's home, in the same room with the Leroy Neiman paintings. And I don't know how familiar you are with Leroy
I'm
Neiman.
I'm not, but actually. I was going to ask for a brief education.
He is the sports guy. He is, if you've ever seen a Rocky movie, you've seen Leroy Neiman, because he was in some of the movies. He was the guy with the big crazy mustache, and he painted a lot of boxing. He painted a lot of all sports. A lot of his stuff was in the old Playboys, super colorful. His scene is one of the most notable ones. He did a big piece of Sylvester Stallone's Rocky in the final scene of Rocky III, when Rocky and Apollo are sparring. It freezes on a punch, and then it crossfades into a painting that Leroy Neiman did of that exact scene.
Oh.
And Neiman was he was a pimp, you know. I mean, he was a superstar artist, and he traveled the world, and he did all these famous subjects, from Jack Nicholson as the Joker to, you know, sporting events. He painted live at the Olympics. He was the official artist of the New York Jets in the 60s with Broadway Joe there, and he would like paint shit on the sidelines, and he was an amazing artist, and I really loved his style. And even if people don't know who Leroy Neiman is, you see his work, you will absolutely be familiar with it.
And so in a way, you're kind of like, you got Leroy Neiman perks working now somewhat. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm trying to, you know. I absolutely have modeled a lot of what I do after him, because, like I said, when I started painting with color, I'm like, I love what this guy did with color, and I want to try to do that. But then come to find out that Leroy Neiman is also, by serious artists and art critics, they hate his work. And part of it is that because he was very popular and very famous, and he made a shit ton of money.
Yep,
but
that'll
the other
do
thing
it.
Is that. Yeah, but he also had some pretty bad habits. And for instance, one of the big ones was that he didn't really focus a lot on likenesses, as in like the pieces that he would do. People would argue that, like, okay, I get that he said this is a painting of Mark McGuire, but it doesn't really look like Mark McGuire. And I didn't really give much attention to likeness, but then I had a number of people, they would tell me, I love this piece because it looks like so-and-so, whoever it was. And people, they want to see that, you know. It's that, you know, and that's been a big thing for me in the last year. That was my New Year's resolution, actually, was to improve upon player likenesses and people likenesses. And you can really see it in one of the more recent pieces I did of Wayne Gretzky as a St. Louis Blue. You know, I just really tried to get the face right. And I haven't, you know, probably I would say the last 9 months, that's when I really turned up the dial to try to really improve in that area. And I feel like that my painting has gotten stronger because of it. And that's the other thing, because I'm so new at all this, I'm getting better. If you look at my stuff from like 3 years ago, when I do, it's kind of cringy. It's, you know, it's like, you know, seeing old photos of yourself from junior high. It's like, oh my God, it's so awkward. Why did I make that choice?
Well, let me ask you this. When did you paint Brett Hull 2? The one where he's without helmet, just like it looks like a warm-up skate. How long ago did you paint that one?
Now, that was last summer, and that's the one that Brett wound up buying.
Okay.
So he owned it.
Because that looks just like him. And listeners, if you go to stevewalden.com, there's a tab at the top that says galleries.
Galleries.
If you scroll down and go to hockey, it's on page one. And it's one of the featured. Actually, you can pick up a copy right now. It's on sale for $25. So,
yes, just got those in.
By all means, go pick up one. But yeah, no, that's your work's great. And so you said that was this past summer.
That was last summer. So that would have been last September, October is when I had done that.
Okay.
That was before I turned up the dial. But if you look at like the Wayne Gretzky piece that I did, there's, you know, that's one where I've really worked a lot more at trying to get more detail and just to fine tune that, to make it look more like what it looks like. And it's one of my favorite moments was I was working on the Bo Jackson that you mentioned earlier, and I was probably about 40% of the way into it. And I'd done a little bit of work on the face. And before I'd painted in the team logo or the number, someone walked by me and said, "Hey, that looks like Bo Jackson." And it's like, oh, thank God, they know who it is when I'm doing it. So that's another thing, is that when you paint a piece of someone and then that particular someone sees it, you know, there's always a fear of they're going to say, "That ain't me," or "Who's that?" Or, "God, you made me look like crap." Now, Adam Wainwright's hilarious. Adam, whenever I see Adam, the pitcher for the Cardinals, he always tells me, "You should have made my biceps bigger, dude." So,
I mean, that picture of him with the Flames behind him, like, I'm assuming after they won the World Series, and what year was that? 11?
That was 2013. That 13. Was the NLDS. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Adam, actually, he owns that original painting. He owns that. That's down in his trophy room down in Georgia. That painting has a lot to do with how my career was launched, because he actually saw that painting, which I'd done for a president of a local children's hospital. And then Adam was touring the hospital, and he saw the painting and he mimicked that pose right in front of it. And he tweeted it out and he tagged me in the post. And Fox Sports picked up the news story, and, you know, and that's when my career just really launched at that stage. And I started doing some work with him and his charity and helping him out, because he's a huge humanitarian. I love working with him. He's, you know, he's amazing. You know, and I owe him my career in many ways.
Wow. And rightfully, look, and I could see how he'd be drawn to the painting. Yeah, it's incredible. And that's as a baseball fan, that image right there is iconic. Like,
yeah,
that whole, was that the Rangers World Series, right, that year?
That was 2013, and I always remember that because he's wearing the patch, the Stan Musial memorial patch on his sleeve, and that's yep. how I remember that. It was a couple of years after they won their last World Series, but it was against the Pittsburgh Pirates, is what I remember. And okay.
That's right. When the Red Sox won in 13. That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and the David Freese stuff was back in like 11, I think.
Or yeah, that was 11.
Okay, mm-hmm. Which, by the way, best. I mean, that's why we love baseball. That was incredible postseason.
Yeah.
Now, are you doing any live showings, or do you have any gallery openings or anything like that in the coming months?
Yeah, and I guess it's about less than a month. I'll be painting live at the Big Cardinals Fan Convention, which is known as Winter Warm Up. And I'll be doing several pieces there live, and I love working with the Cardinals. And you know, that event is just so cool because you're around all these people who have a common interest and a common love, and they're so passionate about it. Everybody's decked out in red, and everybody's happy. Well, most people are happy. There's some people that are miserable about being an autograph ticket month, but you know, yeah. I call it second Christmas. You know, it's just. You know, it's just such a charged environment, and it's just, I love it. That's the next big one. It's one of the biggest events of the year, which is funny because it happens like 15 days into the year.
Well, you know, I know I have not attended. I have friends back in Kansas City that go every year to the similar fan fest, you know, with the Royals. But this year with the Cardinals, but they love it. They say it's incredible and they describe it similar, just, you know, kind of how you just did. But I know the Cardinals fans are going to be psyched, you know, with the Ozuna signing. And,
yes.
You know, I really think he's going to contend, like end up being one of the top 5-10 players in baseball. Once he finishes developing as a player. I mean, every year he's gotten better and better. I lived in San Diego, and so I saw him play. For some reason, I'd go to the Marlins games, like, whenever they were in town, and then I saw the Marlins again up in Seattle. And so I saw him play live like 4 or 5 times over the past 2 seasons, and the guy's incredible. You guys will love him there.
And I've also heard that he's really great with the fans as well. And to me, it's like, in many ways, that's become more important to me. It's always been important. Like, I was never a huge Barry Bonds fan because of just the reputation that he had of being a jackass. You know, he just
absolutely
was rude to fans. And so it's like, for that, I'm like, that just speaks to the character of a person. And that's the deal for me. It's like, I don't like people that are shitty people. That's for that reason. There are some players that, you know, I will not paint, you know, and that's, it's a little moralistic. It's a lot moralistic, and it's a lot, you know, me being kind of snooty about it, but
no,
it's like,
I get it. Like, if I called you up right now and I was like, hey, can I get me one of a sweet John Rocker stepping out of a New York subway, flipping off a homosexual with a purple mohawk. And then can there also next to him be someone that's just revealed an HIV positive result test in an envelope. All of that in the subway scene. Would that be possible, sir?
Before you even opened your mouth, I'm like, I wonder if he's going to say John Rocker. You know? So,
oh, I love him, man. I mean, he's an incredible buck hunter. I mean, you get a bow behind that son of a bitch, and you got yourself a bunch of dead fucking deer. That is a promise right there.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to, that's a hard pass on John Rocker, but I will have a number of other artists that I could absolutely recommend to. You know, it's like, yeah, that would work much better for that.
Well, so. I mean, or you could do like a memorialized Rocker. You get Gurriel in there doing the Darvish eyes. You get, just make a collaboration of everyone that's done something remotely racist in baseball. You get you get Ozzie Guillen down in Florida commenting in Spanish. But no, I definitely respect what you're saying. And as a comedian too, like in performing, there's some things that if I don't like, I'm sure as hell gonna shit all over them. You know?
Yeah, for sure.
And that's our right as artists.
Well, it's the thing that, you know, why I think something about it is like, well, at the end of the day, what do we value? Do we value the fact that somebody can throw a ball harder and can run faster than someone? Or do we value the fact that people are decent and they're good human beings? And Adam Wainwright is a wonderful human being. Ozzie Smith, wonderful human being. You know, people that are good dudes. As opposed to, you know, somebody, they're more in it for cash and they don't really give a shit about fans. And they're just like, they just want to, you know, have their money run. You know, it's like, that's fine. It's like, I just don't have as much of an interest in, you know, devoting my time in front of the canvas to commemorate them.
No, and look, when you're working on something, if you don't like it, like, that's going to come through in the work. You know, if you're 100%. If you're painting a dickhead, you're just like, oh, the guy's going to come out and they're like, why does his nose look like a penis? You're like, because he's
right.
Because I hate the guy, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and it's like, I don't have enough my time to be subversive with my art like that yet. You know, maybe someday down the road, I'll do like some kind of a collectible trading card set of, you know, NFL convicts or something like that. The all domestic abuse squad.
I would love if you want to collaborate on something. My mind is runs rampant. I mean, we could have Ray Carruth stepping out of the back of a trunk if you want to. Oh, you know, go.
That's
old school. We could have Mal Hall or Mel Hall like at prom with a 14-year-old taking a picture.
Oh. Jesus Christ.
In a Yankees uniform. I mean, the list goes.
There's no shortage of material, that's for sure.
Look, we could draw up the Royals' entire team from 1983 and 84 that were half the team was federally indicted on cocaine charges. You know, that's a little series right there in itself.
That's right. I just saw, like, wasn't there a 30 for 30 on that recently?
If there's not, there's got to be. In fact, for when I got married, for my groomsman gift, my best man, I got him a card of every player that was indicted from the Royals that season. Vita Blue. I mean, it was great. Willie Wilson.
Was Lonnie Smith involved in that?
I believe Lonnie Smith was. There was one of the outfielders is white dude. I can't think of his name right now. It wasn't Daryl Porter, though he got into his own stuff later. But yeah, I had them all framed.
Like, you know, it's so interesting too. It's like, and that was so much, not to excuse it, but to understand it, so much of it was a part of the culture. And and you look at like the late 70s, the pre-Bird Magic days, when the NBA was struggling with the image issue, there was coke all over the league, you know. And you know, it's just one of those things that was just part of the deal.
Yeah, it was kind of the era. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, no, at that point, a lot of people don't know this, too, in the NBA. You know, LeBron does the powder on the hands, throws it up. That was actually cocaine back from 76 on to 81 in all NBA games.
That's hilarious. It's Roy Tarpley's stash.
Steven, thank you so much for your time. Did you have any gallery showings or anything like that coming up?
Let's see, where there's the big one that's at the winter warm-up. I do a lot more live painting events than I do gallery showing. There's a St. Louis Auto and Car Museum, which is a wonderful place. I'm actually going to be expanding. I'm going to be doing, like, there's a classic Ferrari. I'm going to be doing a painting of that live, and that's in early January as well. I could look at my calendar right now, and yeah, there are a lot of things that are going on. I've got a pretty book schedule through the first half of 2018. That's best way to keep up with that is just, you know, follow me on Facebook at Stephen Walden Art on Facebook, and just follow me, like my page there. I post updates as much as I can there, and then also I post a lot on Instagram as well.
Yeah, and again, listeners, it's not exclusively Instagram. You can also follow him on Twitter at Stephen Walden, and $75,540 raised in 2016 for charity. That's fantastic, man.
And I'm just about to update it. I'm putting together my year perspective, or year retrospective, year in review video together. And on that, so I passed the $150,000 mark. So working with charity thank you. It's a big deal for me.
No, that's a big deal for a lot of people. Just think how many people that's helping, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that fulfills the side that, all right, if I'm not going to be a therapist helping people, how can I help people with my art? And so working with charities has been a huge deal for me.
Oh, well, God bless you, man. That's awesome, Stephen. And again, listeners, StephenWalden.com. Go there. You know, there's, like I said, there's a piece Clippers, everybody in the collection. There's, I don't even know how, looks like you've got at least a couple hundred to choose from. Haven't scrolled through everything yet. But again, listeners, go check that out. And Steven, thank you so much for your time. And if ever you need anything promoted or you got anything coming up, we'd love to have you back on. So please consider
that. Sounds awesome.
Consider that an open invitation.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on.
That's a good guy. Like, I can tell, like, that's a good dude right there. And I cannot emphasize enough. Just go browse his stuff. It's, I mean, there's some incredible prints for $25 and on sale, regularly $40. But even if you're dropping $40 on it or something, it's worth it. I mean, and original. You're not going to walk into your other buddy's place and see, you know, like, oh, I've got that one. It's like, no, you don't. No, this is the good stuff right here. So, guys, by all means, go to his website, stephenwalden.com, and check out his work and pick up a copy. All right, guys, here is the plea. Don't be a dumbass on New Year's Eve and get shit-faced and get arrested or pulled over, get a DUI or DWI. Don't be that person, okay? And don't be the person that's also letting people know on social media, like, hey, DUI checkpoint on Fairfax, DUI checkpoint on Robinson. You know, don't go down Anderson Boulevard. There's a DUI checkpoint. Don't be that person, because it's like, if you're a dickhead and you're driving drunk, I like, part of me, like, if I'm in my 20s, I'm like, yeah, I got away with it. But, you know, as I get older, I'm like, nah, screw you. Just Ubers. There's Ubers now. That's the difference. Like, you can get around this world and not bother people, not kill them with your idiocracy and drunk driving. That's ultimately all I'm trying to avoid here. I just don't want anyone dying. It's really as simple as that. So what I'm saying here, Sportsaholics listeners, is just go to that place, lose your keys, wake up the next morning, and live another day. Really, as simple as that, right? But guys, that's going to be it for this. The unnumbered, I'm going to just call it the holiday episode. Steven, thank you so much for coming on, man. And your work's fantastic. Continue to do what you do and grow and get better and better. Cause I don't know how you can, cause it looks incredible, but look, you're the artist, you're the guy making this stuff. So if you can make it look even better, by all means, go at it. And Eric, have a great New Year's yourself, buddy. It's good talking with you there. And listeners, guys, be safe. If you see a loved one, tell them you love them. Give them a hug, all that stuff. Remember, it's the thought in the gift, right, that counts. Don't worry about if you got something crappy, whatever. Just, it's like it's the thought, right? Unless it's like the sixth or seventh year of shitty gifts, and then drop your expectations. Don't expect some great gift out of someone that's never given you a great gift. That's kind of on you. But guys, stay obsessed. Thanks for listening. Again, Kansas City listeners, come out to Stanford and Sons. That's the 26th, the 27th, and the 28th of December. That's right after Christmas. 7:30 shows each one of those nights. You can go to johnjonishere.com. to get some exact details, links to tickets, and all that stuff. Guys, stay obsessed. Love you. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the comments, the likes, the iTunes, all that stuff. Keep that up. And we'll be back soon in the new year, 2018. Who's gonna be a world champion in 2018? We'll find out soon. In LA.
What a drag to realize that everything's so different and so same. All my California friends are searching for their mind, and it's been right there in their heads all the time. L.A. Blues, L.A. Blues, you want me to be like you? There ain't no way. California Charlie met me at my room when I got in. We toasted country picking and the help of all our good and mutual friends. Before the morning came, we put a handle on the world and decided that we'd give it to this world. L.A. Blues, L.A. Blues, you want me to be like you? There ain't no way. Soaking up that sunshine and eating eggs and bacon over life. Sleeping through the daytime and contemplating sin throughout the night. Please hand me my hat and darling, give me back my thing. Old T's got a bunch of songs to sing. L.A. Blues, L.A. Blues, you want me to be like you? There ain't no way. California, and I wouldn't want to put it down no way. But I heard what you're thinking, and it ain't exactly what I want to say. Someday, California, I'll come roaring back to you if you don't fall in the ocean before I do. L.A. Blues, L.A. Blues, you want me to be like you? There ain't no way.